Okay, so I am here with Kiyoshi Kurosawa, who is the director of Tokyo Sonata, as well as translator Linda, who will be helping us out through this conversation. Linda and Kiyoshi, how are you doing?
Konnichiwa.
Fine, thank you.
Okay. First off, a sonata differs from a cantata because it is a musical composition without a voice. Now, is it your contention with this film that contemporary Tokyo is now a city without a voice? To what extent does this film reflect either your worldview, Kiyoshi, or Max Mannix, who was the screenwriter? Or does this particular notion of the sonata extend into the purely poetic?
まあ、ソナタというのはあのカンターターとは違うのが人間の声が抜けていてピアノのみということで、この映画は人間の声が抜けた映画ですかね。そしてどこまでこれは黒沢ワールドをあの反映してますか、どこまでマックス・マニックスのワールドを反映してますか。
そうですね、あのそのまずソナタっていうタイトルはなんとなく響きがいいのでつけただけで、あんまり意味はよく分かってなかったんですね。だから、あ、声が抜けてるっていう意味がもしそのあたりにあるんでしたら、それはとても面白いなと今初めて聞きました。
Actually, the title Tokyo Sonata, I gave this film that title because it kind of had a nice ring to it. I just learned now that a sonata compared to a cantata is voiceless.
それとマックス・マニックさんの書かれた脚本はとても面白かったんですけど、やはり、非常に、ちょっと古い、典型的な あまりに、類型的な、日本の家族像を書かれていたので、それを元に して僕はそれを現代風に書き直しました。ですから、映画の中でこれはいかにも典型的な古い日本の家族かなと思われる部分が多分マックスさんの書かれた部分です。で、そうではないと変なことをやっている部分、これが本当に日本の家族なのかっていう思われる少し羽目を外したような部分、それは皆僕が後で書いた部分だと思っていただければいい。
And in terms of Max Mannix, his original screenplay was a very interesting screenplay, but it was a little too stereotypical in terms of his portrait of a typical Japanese family. So I took that screenplay and significantly adapted it, adding many more contemporary elements. So whatever elements of the screenplay and the film you find are kind of traditional Japanese family, that's Max, and all the other wacky stuff is me.
In terms of the wacky stuff, there is one thing I wanted to ask you about, and that is, you have this train running behind the Sasaki home, and this suggested to me, along with the fact that you cut this film frequently crossing the axis in the editing, crossing the 180 line, it almost suggests an Ozu parody, or the kind of movie that Ozu would have made if he were to live in our particular times. And I wanted to ask you how this visual style originated from, as well as the subway line.
いつも電車が家の隣を外してて、編集的にも180度線を結構超えたりしてるんですけれど、ある意味なんかこれはオズパロディというか、今オズさんが現役だったら彼が作ってるような映画というふうに思ったりするんですけどね。
オズと言われるのを一番恐れていたんですけど、僕は、僕自身は本当に大津安二郎の大ファンで、マニアと言っていいでしょう、強く影響を受けている分、今回なるべく大津安二郎のことは考えずに、それと大津とは全く関係ない、スタイルで撮ろうと心がけました。まあ、でも知らぬ間にいくつかのシーンはオズのようになってしまったかもしれませんね。
Yes, Ozu was the name I was most dreading hearing, if only because I'm such a huge maniacal fan of him that I really tried to shut him out of my brain, but I guess subconsciously a little bit of his influence remained.
Back to this notion, Ozu was not a part of developing this script. I mean, the subway line, I didn't get an answer for the train behind the house, and I'm very curious about that because it very much reminded me of Ozu's trains.
電車はすごくやっぱりどうしても Ozu を思わせられたんですけれど。
いや、ただね、電車はたまたまなんですよ。最初から それこそ脚本には書いてませんでしたし、狙ってたんじゃなくて、ただいろんな東京での東京の中で、佐々木家にふさわしい家はないかなと探していたら、たまたま電車沿いに家があったんですね。それでだったら面白いんで使おうということで、偶然あったんです。狙っていたわけではないんです。
Actually, that train and the proximity to the house of the Sasakis was not in the script at all. It wasn't intentional. As I wandered around Tokyo looking for the right home for the Sasaki family, there happened to be a train track next to that particular house.
Well, I wanted to ask about the notion of pretending in this film. When losing his job as an administrator, Sasaki decides to pretend that he's still employed. And this decision could be read on multiple levels. He is pretending to be employed because it helps him to cope. He is pretending to be employed because it allows him to get in touch, possibly, with the artistry of sharing. And we know, of course, by the end of the film, that there is something of an artistic blood within the family line. Or pretending also helps him to fit into the great world of pretending that is likewise shared by the notion, by the film medium. I mean, if we are talking about pretending, this film is based in a medium that involves pretending. So this could almost involute upon itself. What of this? So what of pretending to pretend to pretend? How far should we pretend here in terms of not only watching this film, but also thinking about the film? I mean, you're presenting pretending within a medium of pretending. So what of this?
そのまあ、ふりをするということなんですけど、その失業してその失業してないふりをするんですけれど、結局はその映画っていうのも根本的にふりをしてるんですよね。本当じゃなくて、だからその映画という本当じゃないふりをしている中で失業してないふりをしてるっていうのはどこまで意味があるんでしょうか。
ああ、そうですね。いや、そういう、それは大変面白い指摘なんですけど、そういうともうみんな、僕だって映画監督のふりをして映画を作ってるんですけど、ふりをしないで生きてる人っていうのは多分いないんじゃないでしょうか。だからみんな大体何かのふりをして、ふりをしないと生きていけない、僕だって必ずそうでしょう。映画を撮っていないときは自分が何者であるか本当に怖いんですけど、いや自分映画監督なんだ、映画をいつかまた次撮るはずだと信じて生きているわけです。だからまあそれは人間の多分本当本質的な問題なんだと思いますね。何かのふりをしないと生きていけないというのは。
Well, yes, that's a very interesting question, but, you know, after all, I'm just pretending to be a movie director myself. I mean, I think life is actually, in fact, impossible without pretense. And that, I think, you know, fundamentally, when I'm not directing a film, I live terrified as to who I am, and I simply talk myself out of my anxiety by persuading myself that I'll be back to being a movie director again someday.
To jump off of this particular idea, I also wanted to bring up the episode with the teacher who nonchalantly takes the porn manga charge. He says, I'm an adult, so this hardly bothers me. And when he accuses the son of being the owner of the graphic novel, the connection here reminded me very much of the false connection between weapons of mass destruction and Iraq. And in this film, we also have Iraq. So is it your suggestion in this particular episode that the idea of being adult means casually accepting these charges or connections that don't actually stack up, like the porn manga scenario, or not just the porn manga scenario, but also the graphic novel that basically the son just hands over. It's not his, but he's accused of being the owner of that particular graphic novel. So what of the idea of guilt by association like this?
エロ漫画のシーンなんですけど、あれはまあ、息子にはその間違いはなかったのに先生がお前のせいだというのは、これはそのまあイラクに触れる映画の中でアメリカがその、大量破壊兵器がイラクにあるというインチキの無責任な 指摘と何か共通点はありますかね。
あ、いや、あ、そこまで考えてなかったですね。そうか、そのようにも取られるのか。いや、そこまですごい裏があるわけじゃないんですけど、まあでも学校の先生なんて大体あんなもんだったよねっていうのは僕の実感です。真実が何かっていうことを教えるんじゃなくて、とにかくある規則なり、ある教科書に書いてあることなり、真実がどうだ、その学生が何考えているとかいうんじゃなくて、これはこうなっている、世の中はこうなっている、何ですか、これにとにかく従えとかですね、とにかくそれを教えるのが学校の先生だったように思うので、それを学校の先生 の、 そのリアルな姿ってこんなもんだよねというふうに描いただけです。
I actually hadn't thought about the connection between the erroneous charges of the existence of weapons of mass destruction. I hadn't thought about it that deeply. Mostly, I was just trying to convey what I thought was a realistic portrait of teachers in school, which is that they're not really interested in teaching the truth. They just want to teach what's written in the textbook and teach you what the rules are and how to follow them. And so mostly I was striving for a realistic portrait of teachers in a conventional school.
But there's also this idea of the line, I am an adult, so this hardly bothers me. So again, going back to that line, and also bringing up another issue that the many men in this film have to deal with, which is authority. Sasaki constantly says, it affects my authority, and yet is incapable of action and is incapable of owning up to his reality. Again, going back to pretending that he is employed when in fact he is not. So I wanted to ask about how this relates to the overall theme that we started this conversation with, which is essentially a voiceless society, a society in which people are incapable of taking charge or taking action while they allow the sweeping world to, well, while they allow the world to sweep over them.
まあ、そういう意味ではその、まあ、その先生も父親もいつも権威ということにしがみつきながらも実は行動が取れなくて、まあ、一番最初私が聞いたその声なき社会みたいな、ただこう渦巻く中でこう突っ立ってる個人というか、のような、描写でしょうかね。
そう、その通りだと思いますね。あれとも、とりあえずそのふりをしておかないと自分が何者であるか分からなくなるということとも重なっていると思います。先生は先生のふりをしない限り多分人は自分が何者だか分からなくなってしまうんでしょう。多分全部同じ現代という時代ってそういう時代ことなのかなという気がしますけども。
Yes, I think it does come back to sort of the need for everyone to pretend. I mean, the teacher needs to pretend that he's a teacher as much as the father that he's working. And I think that's actually the hallmark of modern life, pretending in order to not lose sight of yourself.
I wanted to ask a question about the visual elements in this film. There's one moment in which the piano teacher is taking a call involving her divorce, but you frame her in a way where you actually don't see her on the phone, or she is behind this wall as she is making this particular call. And also, while we're on the subject of the visuals, hopefully you can provide an idea as to the origin of this particular shot, but also the many men who walk in very precise lines to their jobs and the Y intersection just outside the Sasaki home. This suggests very much a hyper-realist reflection of the organization in Tokyo. I wanted to ask how these two visual elements came and originated. And I also want to ask about the kind of unity of the visuals for this and how this came to be and what where this originated from.
まあ、2つのシーンについてちょっと聞きたかったんですけど、ピアノの先生が 電話に出てるんですけど、彼女が電話に出てる姿が映ってないシーンと、あとはあの列を組んで、あの毎朝通勤している人たちの、まあ、波というか、はい、そういうのはどういうところからアイデアが来たんですか？
そうですね、どういうとこから来たんだろう、
東京と、あの列を組んでる人たちはやっぱり東京のその組織化というか統一感みたいな
も
の、はいはい、
まずそうですね、あの列を組んでいる人たちというのは今回これまでの僕の映画のとちょっと違ったことをやろうとしたことがあって、何かっていうと、主要な登場人物たち以外の人たちもなるべくたくさん映したいと思ったんですね。でそれは東京という街、主人公たちだけじゃない、東京という街のシステム、街がどう動いているのかというようなことを そこにうごめく人たちで表現したかったんですが、それはあちこちのシーンで、そういう人たちが映っていると思います。で、その一斉に歩いていくサラリーマンたちという会社員たちというのもその一つです。東京という街のシステムを表現した。
Yes, certainly in terms of the people, all the men walking in rows, commuting, one of the big changes I made in this film from my other previous films is that I'm showing many, many other ancillary characters other than the main characters. And I also wanted to show kind of the human infrastructure of Tokyo itself. So through those people walking in lockstep towards their work, I wanted to show sort of the human infrastructure of Tokyo.
I wanted to ask about the question of symbolism. There's one fantastic scene in which Sasaki is humiliated at a job meeting. He mentioned something about being a good karaoke singer, and then he's asked to use a pen as a microphone. And here, the pen is actually not mightier than the sword. But what was intriguing about this is that the symbol of bureaucracy is transformed into this symbol of imagination. It almost suggests the incompatibility between business or corporations or bureaucracy and imagination. And yet it's just one particular pen. It's a nice little inversion. And I wanted to ask about the semiotic basis that this film stands upon. Things like that pen. And also we were talking about the earlier, I had mentioned the shot of the wall, but maybe we can talk about the pen right now.
シンボリズムなんですけれど、あのカラオケが歌えるっていうあの面接のシーンでマイクのはずであるペンを渡されて、あのまあペンの中に私が見えるのはそのビジネスというものと、あの人間の想像力というものの根本的な矛盾みたいなシンボルに見えるんですけれど、この映画の中のシンボリズムというものはどういうふうに思ってらっしゃいますか？
いや、面白いとこ指摘します。そんなこと言った方初めてですね。
Nobody ever mentioned that pen before.
まあでも確かにそう見えるかもしれませんね。いや、僕は特に何かをシンボルにして、まああのカラオケのシーンはもうそこにペン、今僕目の前にマイクがあるんですけども、あの場にはマイクといったものでないので、そのすぐそこにあるものはペンだけだったので、あのようなお芝居になっただけなんですけど、それが何かのシンボルだということはあまり考えませんでした。あまり僕は映画を撮っていてそれが何かのシンボルだというふうにのことを思いながら撮影することはあまりないですね。ただそれが後で見たら確かに何かの映画全体を見たらその瞬間が何かのシンボルに見えたとしたら、それはとても嬉しいことです。撮っている時はその本当目の前のものをリアルにそれをただ撮っているだけで、後からそれが何のシンボルに見えるかというのは実は考えてないんですね。
Well, you know, actually in terms of what that pen symbolizes, I actuallyAlthough I happen to have a microphone in front of me now, there was none in that room, and so I just tried to imagine the most likely object, and it happened to be a pen. I don't actually, when I'm filming, I don't actually really think in terms of symbols. Once the film is assembled, and we have the whole world view of the film, if something winds up looking like a symbol, then I'm very happy. But I don't actually consciously go about searching for symbols when I make the film.
If you don't consciously go out looking for symbols, on what intuitive basis does the scene, for example, at the mall in which there's the cleaning fluid, one is declared, well, this will clean everything, but it's only in use of emergencies. It's a very funny scene, but it also has this underlying theme of specialization that essentially specialization folded into this regrettable tendency to conform to the rules. That to me strikes me as something very symbolic, I would argue, and it also strikes me as something that is also obviously funny. But I'm curious as to how thinking about a scene like that, in which there are multiple layers here that can be used both in executing the scene and also an audience member like me interpreting the scene. Do you think about a scene like that on multiple levels, or is it really just intuitive? I mean, that to me, I think you're being slightly disingenuous, I would argue.
そういうシンボルをあまり考えないで撮ってるっていうことですけれど、例のモールの清掃用のいろんな洗剤の説明は、まさかあれは当たり前になんかただ淡々と描したとはちょっと思えないんですけれど、やっぱりある何かのその近代社会の文才化とかいうなんかルールを守れとか、なんか少しはシンボリズムがあったんじゃないでしょうか。
そう、またそれも面白い指摘で、だそんな、いやまあそう言われてみるとそうですね、あれは、あれも特にね、何か現代社会をその批判的に批判するためのシンボルとかいうことで、また考えずに、なんとなくおかしいからああいうセリフにしただけなんですけど、でもおっしゃるように、撮ってる時は本当にそこまで考えませんでしたが、単に汚れを落とすだけでもそこにいろんなルールを見つけて、それに縛られている、まあ、縛られなければまた自分の存在価値を見失ってしまう、まあ、そういうことは本当現代社会の典型的な一つのあり方かもしれませんね。本当考えてなかったそんなこと。
Frankly, I really hadn't been thinking about all of the symbolic potential for that scene. I just wrote it because it was funny.On the other hand, I guess it is interesting that, I mean, I think it does fit into the theme of all those rules simply to clean something, because those rules help us to maintain our identity in modern life.
One last question, because we got to get out of here, but I wanted to ask about the violent moments in the final part of the film. If you were presenting a world here in which people are trapped, should we not accept this world as it is? Does not, say, a Deus Ex Machina, as we have many of them throughout this film, get in the way of looking at the world as it is, which is a really terrifying notion that here we are, all pretending. Why uproot that with a Deus Ex Machina?
いくつかの、日本語でデウエクスマキナってどういう、要するに突飛な、その現状にはありえないような、まあ救いとか神の手みたいなことによって、まあ逃げ出すわけですけれど、実はもっと根本的な恐怖が現実であって、みんな現実というものの罠にはまったまんま、描写するべきなのになぜそうやってこう神の手みたいなものを、別に神様とは関係ないんですけど、その現場にありえないような、
はい、
まあ、現金だろうが何だろうが、泥棒だろうがみたいな、そういうの
を。いや、それはどうしてでしょうね。いや、そう、どうしてもああいうふうに解決、まあ、一種の抽象化した、ちょっと抽象的な解決方法を見出したかったからと思うんですよね。現実、もちろん現実を現実のまんま描くことっていうのはできなくはないんですけど、 それだと多分何一つ解決しないまま一体どうしたらいいんだろうというところで終わらざるを得ない、何の答えも見つけられないんですが、それはフィクションの世界、フィクションの映画ですから、僕が作っているのは、やはりある一人一人、この映画の中に出てくる人たちはリアルな人でありつつ、どっかで、それはいろんな人たちの代表であり、どっか抽象化されたあるテーマを背負った作られた人物でもあるわけですね。それがある抽象的な解決に進むには、うん、やっぱり僕はリアルなだけではない、ある少々突飛であっても強引な あるドラマのこうダイナミズムを作り出すのが一番正しいやり方だと思って、あのようにいたしました。
I think because I wanted to resolve it, I wanted a kind of an abstract resolution. This really is not ultimately a film about reality. I could certainly show reality as it is, but the things would just end in a muddle. And frankly, I'm working in a fictional world. So although my characters are real, they all ultimately are representatives and abstractions of a larger theme that I'm pursuing. So I wanted a forced dramatic resolution as a kind of an abstract resolution because that's what works for me.
Okay. Well, Kiyoshi, Linda, thank you very much for taking the time out. It was a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you.
All right. Oh, 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 oh,
here in the moonlight, hold me while I sing to you my teenage sonata of my love.